Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, and welcome to Forever 35, a podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. I'm Dori Shafrir.
And I'm Kate Spencer.
And we're not experts.
We're just two friends who like to talk a lot about serums.
And this is technically a mini episode, but we're doing things a little differently this week.
This is probably a more of like a special episode, an emergency episode, a pandemic episode.
Whatever you want to call it.
We're talking about coronavirus today. COVID-19. We have received emails from listeners about it. We are currently also living it ourselves.
We don't have it.
Oh, gosh. No, I'm sorry. That was not clear. But I mean, for example, I just received an email while we were recording today about my children's schools closing for many weeks.
Yep.
Things like that are happening. And we know they're happening to all of our listeners on different levels. So we wanted to talk about it.
Yeah.
And to do that, because not only are we're not experts about many things, we're certainly not experts about pandemics. So
no, we can't even like pretend to be experts about pandemics.
I am having a hard time saying epidemiology.
Although you just said
it. Just nailed it. But every time I go to say it, I have this voice in my head that's like, is it going to be right?
It's a mouthful.
It's a big word. Yeah. I like it though. But we reached out to some people and have interviewed them for this episode. So you'll be hearing from all sorts of experts about this topic from a variety of different angles.
Yeah. And you'll be hearing from two listeners who are currently under quarantine in Italy.
Yeah.
And we're very grateful that they reached out to us and were willing to be interviewed. And you know, we also just kind of want to broach the subject that we know that doing a podcast about self-care and skincare and things that could be seen as frivolous in a time of a very serious pandemic could be seen as superficial, and we're very mindful of that. But we also understand that the show is self-care for a lot of people. And
you know what? It's also self-care for us to do it.
Totally.
And we're hoping, sorry to interrupt you. I don't know if I've ever thought about this show that way, where I was just like, I'm going to be home with my kids for a while. I need to do this podcast.
Yeah.
It gives me a lot of peace and
so we're
pleasure.
Going to keep doing it so Kate can stay sane.
This is only for me.
No, I feel the same way. But, you know, I anticipate that the tone of things might shift and we're kind of heading into uncharted territory here. So we are open to your suggestions and feedback. And yeah, we just, we're here for you.
Yeah. And also, we have no idea how things are going to go.
No.
So bear with us if we have to do this remotely from each other, if we don't have guests for many weeks. We're also trying to maintain a sense of consistency on the show, but like, who the heck knows?
So Kate, how are you feeling right now about coronavirus and its attendant complications?
I think I'm feeling the way many of our listeners have expressed to us that they're feeling. I'm having a lot of anxiety ranging from my own family's health to my community to, you know, the underserved populations here in Los Angeles. I'm thinking about, you know, for example, my children's school district is closing. I am very fortunate in that my husband and I are able to work out, you know, our own schedules so that we can be with them and we can provide food for them. There are a lot of families where that's not the case. And I'm just thinking about the way this impacts not just my immediate family, but also so many people in so many different ways. And I have a lot of just fear and worry about everybody. That's a lot of people to be worrying about. But, you know, I mean, there's just so many levels in which that this is going to hurt people in all sorts of different ways. Not even considering the health. You know, I'm thinking about job security and food security and home security and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, here's the tangent. I'm also like, is my therapist going to keep having appointments? Because I'm supposed to go next week. Of course, I'm worried about my parents and the health of the elderly, my neighbors. I mean, it's on and on. You know, and listeners know, we're thinking about all these things. I mean, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, I personally, you know, I feel like I've been anxious about this for a few weeks now. And sometimes to a point where some of the people around me were sort of dismissive of my anxiety. Not exactly dismissive, but just sort of like, okay, like that's weird. And you know, it's not like I needed to be proven right, but it is sort of sobering to see all these people kind of come around. That's not really answering your question, but it's just something I've been thinking about, and also how now I'm navigating this and just trying to figure out how life is going to be. And that's like a very stressful thing right now. In terms of like my family, you know, my husband is at work today. We're recording this on Friday, the 13th. His show was still shooting today. So, you know, that is also a source of anxiety for me. I don't know what he's being exposed to on that set. And my son, Henry, was also sick the last week and a half. So I feel like I got a little bit of a taste of what social isolation with a baby looks like, because we couldn't take him to the park. We couldn't really take him anywhere. And it gets old pretty quickly. So I don't know, you know, working from home is going to be interesting. I don't know how much I'm going to get done. I haven't historically been able to get much done working from home. So that is a concern of mine. I'm grateful that our job is something that we can do while this is all going on. Like if we are not allowed to record in person anymore, like we can record remotely. And since this is our livelihood, like that's huge. And
yeah.
I know most people are not in that position, especially people who work in creative industries and work for themselves. So I feel really fortunate and grateful for that. My parents are another source of stress. They definitely had not been taking this super seriously, I think, until very recently. And I think a lot of people, just anecdotally, people I've talked to, it's the same kind of situation. I mean, my parents went to two Broadway shows and the opera last weekend.
I mean, my dad is like me. Our anxiety is the same. And so he was supposed to come visit next week. And like many weeks ago, he was like, I'm not coming.
He knew.
And I kind of was like, Dad, come on.
Right.
So he knew.
He knew.
But yes, many people I hear expressing challenges with their parents.
Yeah. I mean, it just feels like our society is not equipped for this in a way that is scary. And I'm trying to kind of just take it day by day while also, like you said, thinking about the less fortunate, thinking about other things that we can do to kind of mitigate what's been going on. I'm rambling.
No, it's, I mean, it's all happening in real time, right? Yeah. So every day is different. And it brings up a lot of different challenges. And you're, I mean, none of us know what we're doing here.
Yeah.
We're all just trying our best.
We are just trying our best.
And we would love to keep hearing from you.
Yeah.
Look, by all means, about what we are experiencing with COVID-19. But also, it is okay if you want to call in and talk about butt care with us.
Totally. We still have to take care of our butts.
Well, we do. And like, I do feel like the toilet paper hoarding is somewhat like is a topic we can address on this podcast.
Everyone should get bidets.
You know, I have seen many people saying that, and actually someone tweeted at us about how we were on the bidet train.
I mean, we were early on that bidet train.
Yeah. If we all had bidets right now, there wouldn't be
this might
sold
be maybe this
paper.
Will be the thing that like this will be the tipping point for America to start using bidets.
Big bidet is really going to make a
but big toilet paper is going down.
They're literally in the shitter.
Yeah.
Ooh. Sorry. Look, you gotta be able to make jokes during tough times.
But it's true.
I do think, as you mentioned earlier, Dory, like while oftentimes ideas of self-care practices are positioned as frivolous all the time.
Yeah.
And certainly in more these huge, stressful global crises, even more so. But it's so important right now to be taking care of our mental health in whatever way we can, our emotional health, finding ways to have human connection, even if we can't physically be together. Yeah. So,
you know, I also just want to shout out the Forever 35 Facebook group, because there have been a lot of really good posts in there about kind of like things to do if you have to be at home and taking care of your mental health. And just like, I really like our community. So it's a good place to just kind of hang out.
Yeah. You know what? Hang out online.
Hang out online.
And thank you to the mods who are holding it down.
Yes.
And such a great job, especially during this time.
Thank you for reminding me, because I keep meaning to shout out the mods of our subgroups.
Go on.
Who are also amazing.
Yeah.
And as a member of several subgroups, I mostly lurk, but I sometimes comment. You know, I know that those mods are also working super hard to keep those groups going and make sure things stay civil. And I just wanted to say, we see you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. All right. So we are going to kick things off with an interview with a very smart person.
To put it mildly.
Her name is Caroline Buckey, and she's an epidemiologist. And we got to ask her all sorts of questions about coronavirus and its spread. So here is Caroline. We are so excited to be talking to Caroline Buckey, who is Associate Director and Associate Professor at the Center for Communicable Disease Dynamics in the Department of Epidemiology at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. Did I get all of your titles?
Yes, I'm sorry. It's quite a mouthful.
So some of the measures that have been put into place in the U.S. In the last couple of days, we're speaking to you on Friday, March 13th. You know, a lot of schools have started shutting down. People are encouraged to practice social distancing. What is your, I guess, analysis of the measures that have been put in place so far? Do you think they're enough to stop the spread?
Well, I think that they are coming. I think we should stop large gatherings immediately. I think we need to all practice social distancing to the extent that we can. Mm-hmm. Not everyone will be able to, but for people who can work from home and so forth, I think we absolutely have to start taking those steps now. One of the reasons that we are so concerned is that the U.S. is quite behind in terms of surveillance. So we don't have very much testing capacity. So if you feel like you have a cough and a fever and you go in to be tested, there's a likelihood that we won't be able to test you. And so that case count doesn't get logged. And what that means is that we don't actually know the scale of the problem. So to that extent, you know, everywhere that we've started testing, we've started seeing cases, which suggests to me that there is substantial community-wide transmission across many regions in the U.S. And so we have to should take this seriously and start social distancing from now. And that can be on different scales, right? Like we can do, it's not necessarily saying that nobody should leave their house, but certainly starting to take sensible measures, trying to work from home, trying to limit the use of public transport, and certainly not going to large gatherings of people.
Oh, go ahead, Kate.
I'm just curious if you can speak to kind of the how we can be prepared while without veering into panic. It seems like that is a very fine line that many of us are having a hard time walking right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I've been speaking to my sisters and friends and loved ones. And, you know, this is likely going to be quite a long, drawn out affair. And so it's important to take care of our mental health and not to panic. The important thing to remember is that most healthy younger adults and children will not be severely impacted if they get infected. So while it's not completely benign, one thing that I'm thankful for is that our kids will almost certainly not get severely ill. So we don't have to worry about kids, although they can transmit the virus. So we do need to be aware of social distancing for them. So for most people, the important thing is to remember that it's not necessarily going to land you in hospital, although it might. The bigger concern is that a lot of our loved ones and our communities are made up of elderly people, and the death rate and the incidence of severe and hospitalized cases rises quite steeply after the age of 60. So that means that the social distancing measures and the care that we're taking to protect our communities is not necessarily cause for panic for our own children and for ourselves if we are adults or healthy. It's to think about protecting our elderly populations, our vulnerable populations. And then the other main thing is that if the epidemic happens very, very quickly, like there's a very high peak and it happens quickly, it means that our hospitals might get overwhelmed. So they'll get overwhelmed in terms of being able to care for COVID-19 patients, but also then we will be short with respect to caring for patients that need regular care anyway, you know, people with normal needs in the healthcare system. So the overall risks for individuals vary, but for healthy adults and for children, the risks of severe disease and death are low. This is really about thinking through our healthcare capacity and our vulnerable groups.
How would you suggest addressing this with some of these vulnerable populations? I know anecdotally, I've had so many conversations with friends who say, you know, my parents just aren't taking this seriously.
Mine aren't either.
Yeah, how do we address that?
So, you know, it's very hard. I mean, I think sometimes numbers don't hit home with people, right? So even though we can explain that the fatality rate is significantly 10 times higher than the flu, it's sometimes hard to get people to take this seriously. I think just continuing to have these conversations as the epidemic unfolds and taking steps with our own parents and loved ones and neighbors to make sure that they are prepared. So just to put in place that they have a plan if they feel sick, if they get sick, that they have groceries stocked up, that they've thought about their prescription med needs over the next couple months and they're in good shape, that they know who to call if they're feeling worried, and that we've set up kind of the networks and support structures around them that they might need if they start more concern or if they get sick. For my own parents, you know, I've said to them, look, this is, I understand that you don't feel worried about this, but for me, please, can you take this a little seriously? So, however we can try to talk and communicate with our elderly friends and loved ones, I think the better. And, keeping them in the loop and keeping communicating with them. There are a lot of isolated elderly people who are alone, and so we need to think about our communities.
Can I ask maybe the most basic question?
Sure.
What is COVID-19. There's so much dialogue and kind of misinformation, and it's like the flu and it's not like the flu. You know, I mean, there's just so much stuff swirling. Is there a way to explain it in layperson's terms for our audience so that we all have a clear understanding of it?
Sure. So this virus, it's from the family of coronaviruses. So there's a group of them, and some of them circulate in the States normally, and they are less severe than this one. But that's the family of viruses that this one comes from. The name of the virus is SARS. So it's SARS-CoV-2, SARS-CoV-2. That's the name of the virus. COVID is coronavirus-induced disease. So that's the name of the disease that you get if you have contracted the virus. So the virus's name is SARS-CoV-2. The name of the disease is COVID-19.
And so it's like how HIV causes AIDS.
Right. And the viruses are from a family of viruses called the coronaviruses. And they're called that because when you look at them with a high resolution microscope, it looks like they have the shape of a sort of a crown under the microscope.
Interesting.
So they're not related to influenza viruses, but they are transmitted in the same way. So influenza is another type of virus. They're both spread through droplets and through airborne, you know, close contacts. So they're spread in the same way. And I think some of the confusion is because we tend to classify a whole range of diseases as causing flu-like illness, influenza-like illness. And so it's easy to think that this is a, you know, that it's all one thing. But in fact, this is a distinct virus. It's a new virus that our population has not seen before. And that's part of the reason that it's so alarming, is because we don't have any pre-existing immunity to it. Whereas for flu, you know, we have a vaccine and we see flu every year. And so it's a different kind of epidemiology.
Is this virus spreading faster and farther than other viruses? Like, is the rate of transmission noticeably faster, or is it just that we don't have these immunities built up and that's why it's kind of turned into this pandemic?
So epidemiologists measure this through something called the basic reproduction number, or the R0, which is defined as the average number of cases a new case in a population will lead to. So if I'm infected and I come into a population of people, I will, on average, spread this virus to 2 to 3 other people, and then they'll spread it to 2 to 3 and so forth, which is how you get exponential growth. So that R0 number, that basic reproduction number, varies a lot. But for example, measles has a much higher R0 than this virus, but flu has a lower R0 than this virus. So we think it's more transmissible than flu, but in terms of absolute terms of how quickly and how rapidly it can spread, it's within the range of some of our more transmissible pathogens, but not as high as measles, for example.
Okay, that's really good to know. What else do you think our listeners should know about the virus from an epidemiological perspective?
So I think that it's important. So apart from the personal things people should start doing, like social distancing, hand hygiene, you know, self-quarantining, self-isolating if they have symptoms, and making a plan for themselves, their loved ones, and their community. I think the important thing to know is that this epidemic, if we just consider the US, right now we're just getting started, and it's likely that this is going to last for several months. So people need to also take care of themselves and not panic, and get exercise. You can go outside if you can, you know, stay away from people who look sick and crowds, but you can get exercise and take care of yourself. And then I think one of the biggest concerns that we have is that there's a whole bunch of misinformation out there. There are a lot of us who are epidemiologists who, frankly, don't usually like to be in the public eye because we're scientists and that's how we are. But but we really feel like there's a lot of bad information. So finding trusted sources of information is really important, and making sure that you're not letting kind of trying to stay impervious to the barrage of misinformation around. So, you know, just limit news that is not from a reputable source.
For the layperson, what are some reputable sources of this information that you would stand by?
Well, I think the CDC has information that everybody can understand, and that is very helpful here. The WHO does also release information about health, but CDC has a good source of information in the U.S. context. If you're more on the science nerdy side, then you know, on Twitter, there's an amazing online dialogue between scientific research groups trying to make sense of the literature and the data as it comes out. And again, I would just say, you know, there are better and worse ones to follow. Of course, I'm biased, but I think the CCDD, the Center for Communicable Dynamics, is a good one. That's us. And then there's Johns Hopkins. Johns Hopkins has a fantastic group of scientists working on this, and you know, UW, University of Washington, is doing great stuff. So there's a bunch of research groups as well for people that are interested in the science. But for the lay audience, I would say stick with something like CDC for your kind of day-to-day information.
That is really helpful.
It is really helpful.
Thank you.
Yeah. Sure.
Thank you so much, Dr. Bucky. It was really great to talk to you, and I know our audience is going to be really interested in what you had to say.
Okay, well, stay safe. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. Same to you.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I like to care for my skin, duh. And It's also something that I do love to kind of like get into the research on.
You do have a curious mind.
Look, I have a curious mind. I can't help it.
You do.
But today's sponsor, OneSkin, has made that easy because they do their own fantastic research for their products. In fact, their products are scientifically validated to improve your skin's health while targeting the root cause of aging. The secret is OneSkin's proprietary OS1 peptide. It's the first ingredient proven to switch off the aging cells that cause lines, wrinkles, and thinning skin, and they've got several studies to back it up. They also have an amazing new sunscreen.
Ooh, our favorite.
Our fave. It's the OS1 Shield Protect and Repair SPF 30 Plus. It's got the peptide. It's a mineral sunscreen. It's got antioxidants. It comes in tinted and untinted. I mean, like, what can't this thing do? I'm just saying. I love it. It's so easy to use. And I love that it's just like, zoop, and it feels so nice going on. But don't take my word for it. OneSkin has over 4,000 five-star reviews and was recently recognized by Fast Company as one of the most innovative brands of 2024. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code FOREVER at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code FOREVER. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them, and please support your show and tell them we sent you.
So we were so honored to have listeners reach out to us who have been going through this experience in Italy, and we were able to talk to two of them. So the first listener we're going to hear from is named Eleonora, and she is living in Northern Italy and spoke to us by phone a few days ago.
We are so excited to be talking to one of our Forever 35 listeners, Eleonora Grimaldi, who lives near Bologna in kind of the center north of Italy. And she reached out to us to tell us about what life has been like in Italy in these days of COVID-19. So thank you so much for speaking with us, Eleonora.
Thank you for having me. I am so, so excited. I'm a longtime listener, and it's such a privilege to me to be talking to you right now.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much.
So you said that you're not in the north of Italy. You're not near Milan or kind of where the epicenter of the Italian outbreak has been. So can you tell us what life has been like for you over the last couple of weeks and how things have changed?
Yeah, sure. So let's say that since a week or so, we were in a semi-lockdown situation. Mm-hmm. So it was bad, but not quite that bad. But since yesterday, we are in kind of a total lockdown situation, so we only are permitted to go outside from home to, buy groceries, to buy medicine, and if we really, really need it. Mm. So it's not easy, you know, especially if you have, you know, loved ones, relatives, something you have to really, really do. For example, my grandparents, I really need to see them. They need care. So, you know.
That must be really scary. How are you communicating with family members who you don't live with?
Actually, I live with my parents right now, and I'm trying to connect with the relatives who don't live here near me. And my grandparents through, you know, social networks, you know, Skype. I am actually taking lessons from my university through Skype and through online courses. So, you know, that kind of helps. But I really, really miss my, you know, my social time, meeting with people, my friends, my real life lessons, university, going outside. You don't really know that much how you can value something until you don't have it. Mm. And that's kind of, you know, it's not easy. It's really not easy. And in all of this, I must say, I am kind of privileged in a way that I can take time for myself, for my self-care. I have that kind of privilege, and many, many people in Italy, especially now, they don't have it. Mm-hmm. Many people right now are on the first line working. I am thinking about healthcare professionals especially, but not only them, obviously. They have zero time for themselves right now. They are in a burnout situation. I really do feel for them.
What advice would you give people who are either under lockdown or about to be under lockdown?
Okay, so I really hope this could be useful for you, especially listeners in the US. I am really afraid this is going to spread even further. So my advice would probably be not to panic, not to go people piling stuff in supermarkets, you know, that was a huge problem, stockpiling in Italy. So please do not do that. And another thing, please take care of yourself. Whatever is your self-care method, skincare, yoga practice, reading a good book, a novel, listening to music, keeping your contacts with people you love. This is so important. Not losing your mind.
What are you doing in particular to not lose your mind?
So, I noticed that skincare has become more and more important to me in this period. And I also have to say thank you for your podcast, because podcasting has become a way of self-care for me, listening to you and to other Italian podcasts, for example. It really helps.
Oh, thank you.
What is the atmosphere like? I know you said you're quarantined right now with your parents. What has the atmosphere been like in Italy, and what do you hope? How do I phrase this? What do you hope in you speaking to our listeners? What do you hope people know about the experience of Italians right now?
Well, probably my most recurring thought now is that we are living an historical moment in Italy right now, for sure, but possibly at a global level, if I may say so. I really think our society will be different in a couple of months or so. When I look around myself here in Italy, I see that a new way of socializing is now a thing. People are more responsible in a way. And most of all, there's a new way of thinking, you know, working, for example, at a distance, working from home, that was not very common in Italy before. And now it is becoming more and more common in our society. And most of all, economic changes. I've noticed that a lot of workers are on strike right now because they are becoming more and more aware of safety measures at work, because they obviously don't want to get ill. They don't want to get their families ill. So this is even socially really important. I also hope that the importance of healthcare, of national healthcare in particular, will be even more and more, a given in our society. We also take it for granted, but now I don't think that will be the case anymore.
Yeah.
And you mentioned you're taking online classes. Are you a student? And were you before the outbreak, were you going to a university?
Yes, I am actually a student. I will actually have my final dissertation in 10 days or so. Still don't know the exact date. But even my dissertation will be online at this point, obviously. We cannot go to university like physically, so that will be it. It's kind of sad because I won't have the chance to, share my final studying moment with my family, with my friends, my course mates. But in a way, that's still cool, I guess. We are the first in history, at least in Italy, to get a degree online, an official degree by the state and so on. So that has its bright side in a way.
yeah I mean, you have such an optimistic attitude that I know you feel like you have to, huh?
Yes I think I have a responsibility towards my community, towards my country right now. We downplayed the risk too much before, and now we have to kind of have an optimistic overview of things.
And how long are you expecting? How long do you expect to be quarantined in your home?
For sure until the early days of April, maybe the 3rd, but that's
kind of optimistic in a way. I think all of April will still be a critical month.
And we should clarify for our listeners, you do not have coronavirus, correct? You are currently
fine. We are obliged by law now to stay at home as much as possible. We all are basically quarantined, even if we don't have any symptoms. Beforehand, it was only for people with symptoms. They were obviously obliged to stay at home. But now, the situation got worse very quickly. So for reasons of safety, now we all have to stay at home.
Well, we're glad that you're safe, and we are so appreciative that you reached out to us and are taking the time to talk to us, as Dory likes to say, across the pond.
Yes. And we hope that you continue to stay healthy and safe, and we'll be thinking of you.
Yeah, please give us an update.
I really, really wish you all the best. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. If I may take the chance, it's been kind of like 3 weeks since I don't see my boyfriend. So I would like to say hi to him, because he knows I am on your show right now. I have told him. May I please say to him, ciao, ciao, Luca, ciao, ti amo.
Oh, ciao, Luca. That's got to be, it's got to be really, really hard not having interactions with the people in your life that you're so used to seeing. That's something we don't think about until it's happening. And I can't yet imagine, and we might have to imagine pretty soon.
Absolutely. It's really, really hard. I don't want to, give anxiety to you guys in the U.S. I really know what it feels like. I'm a very anxious person, but this kind of stuff happens. So we have to take everything we can for the better.
Yeah. Well, thank you again. I'm just going to be thinking about Ciao Luca.
I know. Mm-hmm. I've thought about that so much.
Ciao, Luca.
Since we interviewed her.
Yeah. That must be so hard being isolated from your loved ones like
yes,
that.
It's got to be. And your whole, and so many different aspects of your community.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we spoke to another listener in Italy named Julie, who lives about an hour north of Venice and has two kids. And here is what Julie had to say.
Julie is an American living in Northern Italy. She's a Forever 35 listener, and she sent us an email because she is currently quarantined with her family and offered to be interviewed. And we're so thrilled that she's joining us today. So Julie, welcome to the show. We wish it was under better circumstances, but we're so grateful for your time.
Thank you for having me.
So where in Italy do you live?
So my family lives near Aviano Air Force Base. We are affiliated with it in a small town called Sedcile, but we are about an hour north of Venice.
And we should clarify, you and your husband are Americans living in Italy with your children, correct?
Yes, I have a 6 and 3-year-old.
Oh, boy. And you mentioned that you've been quarantined with your family for a while now, right? Could you kind of tell us what the state of things are currently?
We are in quarantine where we need to stay inside of our house, and we have a special permit to have on our person if we leave the house to get groceries or if you need to go to work or have a medical emergency, and that's it. And even the grocery store has to be the closest grocery store to your house, and you have to go alone. You can't bring your kids, and in the grocery store, you have to be a meter apart from everyone else.
Wow.
That's a lot.
It's surreal.
So tell us, you first emailed us on March 3rd. And, one thing that we were really interested in is you said Italy had no prep time. So everything is kind of evolving in real time and was pretty much a messy series of half measures. And then you said Americans have time to prep, and I'm not meaning running to Target and buying canned food and water. I'm meaning emotional prep, so you don't lose your fucking mind. So can you talk to us a little bit about emotional prep and kind of what you would suggest for people who could potentially be under the same restrictions that you're under now?
Yes. So I think if you, well, it's hard because I feel like it depends on if you end up being quarantined and you are working from home, if you're both quarantined, but I feel like regardless, more than stocking up on food, which of course is important, but as of now, we haven't, there's no shortage of food. We are still allowed to get food. I think the emotional toll it's going to take is simply, you are going to be stuck in your house. You're going to, if you have kids, you're going to be stuck with your kids. You're not going to be able to see anyone else, you know, so cutting out any activities, any time for play dates or seeing your friends. So I think just as you're preparing for that, thinking about getting supplies to keep your kids busy, coming up with a plan as to how you and your partner, if you do have kids, are going to navigate that. One thing that we are doing is pretty much tag teaming, where my husband is still working. He hasn't been quarantined because he's a physician. But the second he gets home, he's giving me a break from the kids. And on the weekends, we're taking turns. We're cutting out family time. You know, there's no reason for all four of us to be together right now. It's really just survival, making sure we feel fresh. We're able to be better parents, better partners, because it's, the burnout is real. I definitely hit a wall yesterday after 3 weeks of this where I thought I was doing fine. And then like my daughter bumped me in the eye and I like started sobbing and it didn't even hurt. It was just, you know, like kind of like it had just been a long day. So it definitely, it will catch up with you. So I think just in that way, that's big. And then I think another thing that I keep reminding myself throughout this, and I'm reminding my kids, is why we're doing this, because we're not really at risk. You know, we're young, we're healthy. The kids are young and healthy. Luckily, we aren't in, we don't have our parents here, which has been hard being in a foreign country without support. But now I don't have to worry about them as far as, like in Italy is built on grandparents and all the grandparents pick up the kids from school. Everyone goes to lunch at their grandparents' house. And those are the people we're protecting right now. And whenever we get really frustrated, I just remind my kids that our dear beloved neighbor across the street is the one that we're doing this for. She's old, she has respiratory issues. And, you know, we just have to keep that in mind that we're doing this for the common good. We're not doing it, you know, we just like, we can't think about ourselves. And that helps. It does.
What kind of things are you doing to kind of maintain your mental health and your emotional health? I know you mentioned in your email to us that last week you locked yourself in the bathroom and took a bath. Do you have any thoughts or advice on simple things people can do, people who are quarantined at home can do to kind of maintain a sense, you know, or a sense of normalcy, a sense of calm amidst all the chaos?
Yes. Well, first I have to, a disclaimer, I never wanted to be a stay-at-home mom or a homeschooling mom. This is definitely, you know, I'm fine, but that wasn't my, like, I don't have lots of craft ideas, those things. I feel like I'm really flailing at that stuff right now, but I do think for people like me who are sort of like not being a stay-at-home mom by choice right now, two big things. One is to make a schedule in the morning for you and your kids. And even if like we really don't even stick to the schedule, but one thing I always have on there is TV. And I used to be pretty militant about screen time and, you know, you got to let it go during this time. Another is just keep reminding yourself that you have nowhere to be. I'm like a, you know, we're always like rushing about. I'm definitely a doer. I like to stay busy. And it took me at least a week of school closures to really grasp that like, we have nowhere to be, which is horrifying. But also it kind of took the edge off of like messes and, you know, like I don't need to rush them to get their school clothes on. And if they ask to make pancakes, I never want to because it takes time and it's messy. And now I'm like, well, I guess we can. And like yesterday, my 3-year-old spilled a pound of dried quinoa on the floor, which is like literally
the best thing to spill.
At first, I was like, what is this? I've never seen something so tiny. It's like, are these mustard seeds? And it was quinoa. It was like the worst mess. And I think normally I would have just been like, you know, freaked out. And instead, I took a deep breath and I was like, okay, like I have a month to clean it up. Like I can't even leave my house. So I'm just trying to slow down. And I'm also trying to have the kids clean up their messes. Like usually I threaten, like, you have to clean up your mess or you don't get to do this. And then, you know, eventually we have to do this because we have to go somewhere. And now it's like, no, you actually have to clean up your mess because we have nowhere to go.
Can you go outside? I know you mentioned that you've been asked to stay in your home. What kind of outside time do people get, or is that not allowed?
Yes, we are allowed to go outside. And thankfully, like I live in a pretty small house, one bathroom, not a big living space, but we have a great yard and I'm so thankful for it. So we can be in the yard and I don't want to speak to leaving the yard. I think you can go on walks alone. But it's a little iffy right now. It's definitely feeling like a police state. People are being arrested for being out without a reason, for being in, you know, a group of like not being by yourself, leaving your town. So I you have to stick to your yard.
It's, wow.
I know. It's crazy. I don't know how the U.S. will handle it. As far as those aspects go, I'm definitely watching and hoping for the best.
What is the general mood amongst your friends there and kind of how are you all supporting each other?
So it's a good question. Overall, Italy, I've been like very moved. Like tonight, so it's 7:15 here at 6. They had this like decree for everyone in Italy to open their windows and play instruments.
Oh God, I'm gonna cry.
I know. And it was just a show of solidarity that even if we can't be together, we can you know, still have our humanity. And so we went out on our porch and our street, we only heard a trombone. And it was, I think it was from two houses down. And I know who the man is. He's an old man and he was playing the Italian national anthem.
Oh God. Ooh.
Yeah.
We're crying. We're tearing here up. In California. Wow. That is crazy. That's so interesting that they did that. Oh boy. Whew.
And I don't see that happening in the U.S. I hope, but I don't know. Another thing is there is this, you know, social media helps in these situations. Like all the kids were encouraged to draw rainbows and write Andrà tutto bene, which means we're going to be okay, and tape them to the windows. So we did that today. My daughter and I did.
Jesus.
And I think one thing I just learned about was this app Marco Polo, which I heard about, and I just kind of was like, I don't understand it. Like, why does anyone need to watch me talk? But now I have started using it because I, you know, and I'm a writer. I am alone a lot. I don't necessarily always think I need a ton of human interaction, but now I'm like, oh, I love seeing my friends' faces. And my kids are able to talk to people too. And I think that's great. Also because like talking on the phone or FaceTime is really hard with the time difference. because I just never have the right time to talk to people or my kids are interrupting me. So that's really helped. I can just leave like a 30-minute little video. My friends can watch it when they're available. They can send them back to me. I can watch that. And so that's been a surprising thing that I just discovered this week.
Love Marco Polo.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, did everybody know about this? I think I just didn't. I thought it seemed redundant, and now I get it.
I learned about it from Kate.
I'm a big fan, although I have to take breaks from it because it becomes a little all-consuming. But I have heard people talk about how they're using it during this pandemic and crisis, and I think it definitely is useful for connecting. I'm curious, before we let you go, Julie, what kind of things have you seen in your community in terms of helping more vulnerable populations? I know you have a lot of elderly people, or anyone who might not be able to help themselves. Have you seen any kind of community action, or is there anything that Italy is doing?
On that, I'm not entirely sure. I know that, I'm a foreigner, so I don't know everyone in my community. But one thing I did was, I'm strangely like in with the retiree community, because a lot of them are my husband's patients, and I go to lunches with them because I basically have an AARP lifestyle right now. And so I emailed them all, and I, let them know, if you have a grocery list, please email it to me. I will go to the grocery store and bring you your groceries. Because I know I couldn't imagine being at risk. So that's what I did. And then, I think just individuals are probably thinking along those lines, but it is hard. Like I watch my neighbors. Like today, a neighbor was out with her son, and my daughter was out, and she's like, can he come over and play? I'm just like, no, mm-hmm. So I don't know. The quarantine's new. We're only on day 5 of it, but I do think it's something to continue to keep in mind, because I think everyone is going to be devastated by this in different ways. Some levels are just missing that vacation you really wanted to take, or not getting to do the Boston Marathon. But in other people, it's like complete financial ruin. And I do think we need to keep brainstorming how to at least help on a community level. And, even when if you're still allowed out of your house, and buying a bunch of food for the food bank too, because they're going to need it.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Julie, is there anything else you think our listeners should know, either about your experience or what to expect, that we haven't touched on?
Oh man. I think one little thing is to come up with some songs for to pump you up, and to either like jump around to play when you're all picking up toys, just trying to keep the mood up, keep your energy up. Like I said, I'm not like super stay at home mom with a whole bunch of activities. If anything, it overwhelms me, but I do think keeping active, trying to get everybody to expel some energy, whether it's like running around the house, keep those endorphins up, and try to just keep talking to each other. Keep your spirits up, and remind yourself why we're doing this when it feels like it really sucks, because it's going to, and it's okay to admit it. Like, I don't think we need to take this perspective like, oh, it's good time with our families, and like, it's gonna suck, but it's okay. We're doing it for the greater good.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, we really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
So we have been thinking a lot about anxiety in the time of coronavirus, and we know our listeners have been thinking a lot about this too. So we decided to talk to Dr. Yelena Ketsmanovic, who goes by Dr. K, who is a CBT expert, and she went through a lot of techniques and methods that people can use to help mitigate their anxiety during this time. So here is Dr. K. We are so happy to be talking to Dr. Yelena Ketsmanovic, who is the founder and director of the Arlington, D.C. Behavior Therapy Institute, or ABTI. And she's going to be talking to us today about managing anxiety in the time of coronavirus. So thank you so much for joining us, Dr. K, which is how that's what you go by, right?
That's how I go by.
Yes.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, of course. So, you know, we asked our listeners for some of their biggest anxieties around coronavirus. excuse me. And I'm just going to read a few of them, and then I'm hoping you can kind of broadly address, you know, you don't have to address the specific anxieties, but kind of just to understand what people are anxious about, and then the best way to kind of manage that.
Absolutely.
So here we go. Being asymptomatic and infecting the elderly / vulnerable people around me. Global hysteria resulting in dangerous behavior, shortages of food, medicine, gas, etc. I'm immunocompromised and so are two of my kids. I'm pregnant and worried about possible preterm labor or forced C-section if infected. Mental health while cooped up at home. My child and her safety. My job doesn't offer paid leave. Not being able to get professional help because of it, especially for my anxiety. Older family getting it because healthy adults aren't being proactive. The effect on our economy and travel industries. And then one person also was concerned about the eventual lockdown, living in a rural area already and not having access to fresh food and supplies. So That should just kind of give you a picture of where people's heads are at right now.
Yes, yes. And it's very consistent with, you know, what we've been hearing in therapy. You know, it's very interesting. I would say about 3 weeks ago, barely any of our clients, of our patients, mentioned corona or concerns around that. Even, you know, clients where we would expect they would
be.
So to call like with OCD, contamination OCD or health anxiety. And then 2 weeks ago, everybody was mentioning it. You know, it came on really suddenly. I think there was, you know, a public consciousness at once. It was everywhere. And in DC area, at least where I live and practice, you know, it was pretty much end of last week and this week when major shutdowns started. And, you know, I think for people, they were kind of putting it, you know, in the back of their mind, it's not so bad. You know, we do that, you know, which is generally a resilient thing to have psychologically to say, well, you know, I'll worry about it when it comes to, you know, to my doorstep.
Yeah.
It's not here yet. And then this week, you know, you just couldn't say that anymore because all the major universities closed down. School districts have started to shut down. You know, Kennedy Center, you know, has announced that they're shutting down tomorrow's Smithsonian and so forth. So it's really now, you know, in front of us. And both me and my associates, you know, there are nine of us in our practice, were saying when I was doing supervision with them, they said every single client is talking about it this week, right? So it's really in front of us right now. I mean, you know, how long it's going to last, we don't know, but it's coming to a halt right now. Yes.
And what kind of practices can people? I actually am a diagnosed person with anxiety and OCD, so this is this is my wheelhouse, but what are some kind of generalized practices, whether or not this is a diagnosis somebody has, but in this stressful time that people can implement to kind of help them manage the onslaught of stress, of worry, of catastrophic thinking?
Sure. So first of all, I'd like to normalize, you know, you mentioned you suffer from it, anxiety disorders and related disorders. I actually, the biggest group of disorders in our country, it is one single biggest group of disorders. So it's incredibly common. It's about 18% of people at any given time suffer from anxiety and related disorders. So it's these days, anxiety disorders excludes OCD and PTSD used to be all together. So, you know, when we put them all together, but you know, that's a 1/5 of a population, you know, so it's a really common thing. And it's probably the most common thing we see in general. And so of course, you know, during these times, people who are not normally anxious are going to get somewhat anxious, and people who have vulnerability for more serious anxiety or a predisposition for it, it's going to flare up. So what to do? First thing what struck me, you know, when you were reading the concerns of your listeners was, you know, that often we end up in the middle of the day, or even more often when we're trying to fall asleep at night, you know, thinking about all of these things at once, right? So, you know, it's a worry. We define worry as a repetitive, sort of unproductive thinking process where you go down these rabbit holes, and what we call them what if rabbit holes, right? Well, what if this happens? And if that happens, what about that? And then what about A and B and C and D? And there is, you know, there's no basically end to it. And it's incredibly unproductive, you know, thinking process, as I'm sure all of us realize it. And yet it's so hard to disengage from that. It is, it's kind of in a way tempted and sucks us in, right? And yet, you know, if you were to ask people, well, you know, how productive that worry, you know, was for you in the end, you know, they can usually realize that, you know, it doesn't result in actually any problems being solved. And that's something also very important to distinguish. When we start, you know, thinking about these problems that are going to arise very realistically these days, is, you know, separate sort of in two columns the things that we can control, even, you know, even to a small degree, and things that we really don't have any control over. And, you know, the things that, and so that's the, you know, as soon as we start thinking about something, you know, think, okay, do I have any control over this? If the answer is yes, then you can kind of go down the path of sort of almost sometimes very helpful. What's very helpful to do is go down the path of structured problem solving. Okay, so, you know, let me think about possible solutions, and then let's, you know, evaluate the solutions, think about the best one, choose the best one and try to implement it, and then monitor how, you know, how that works. And if it doesn't work, then, you know, flexibly move on to another possible solution. And, you know, we generally advise, you know, for people to do that sort of once, to go through that potentially with the input of their near and dear ones, and then, you know, just put a dot and not come back to that. And if you find yourself sort of going back and visiting, which a lot of us do, especially if we're prone to anxiety, you know, just kind of very gently bring yourself to the present moment, to whatever you're doing in the present moment, and say, okay, that has been solved for now, and I'm going to put it on a shelf and, you know, come back to whatever you're doing in the present moment. And then, you know, the column of things that we cannot control, have no control over, you know, realizing that that's really just unproductive worry if we start going down that thinking path. And really, there's nothing to be gained from that. So again, what to do to disengage yourself from these unproductive thinking patterns is a huge help can be really grounding yourself in the present moment. You know, it's basically comes down to what we call mindfulness these days. I, you know, and I have a sort of love-hate relationship with mindfulness. It's incredibly, incredibly useful skill. And yet it has been, I think, overused and misused, and sort of you know, put forth as a panacea for all ills, which of course it's not. However, it is, you know, if we kind of debunk it and just, you know, say it is really bringing yourself to whatever is happening right in this moment. So getting out of your head, and you know, usually I start with you know, doing it with my clients actually in the room, you know, getting into your body and saying a very simple thing is, okay, let's focus on our senses. Let's describe five things that we can see right now, or five green things that you can see right now. Let's touch just around us, wherever we are. Let's touch four things. Let's listen to three things, you know, with whatever is, you know, nearest to you, and then a further sound or a further sound. Then let's, that's a little harder sometimes, let's smell two things. But usually by the time you, you know, walk around the room or wherever you are, you can smell two things. And then finally putting something in your mouth, even a glass of water, and describe a taste. So it's kind of, you know, it's been called sensing mindfulness exercise. And the idea is just grounding yourself in the present moment, in the experience of your senses in here now. And sensing is a good thing because, you know, we don't sense in the past or in the future. We sense right now in this moment. So that's an exercise that I really, really like a lot. And usually it's the first one sort of for me even to go to. And then our next one can be, what we call, it's called diaphragmatic breathing. It's a particular way to breathe. It's a relaxation technique, a particular way to breathe where you're actually trying to calm yourself down. You can do it mindfully, but it is actually more than mindfulness. It's a relaxation technique where you're trying to engage parasympathetic system, which is opposite system from the sympathetic system, which is, you know, fight or flight system that, of course, gets activated during anxiety. So we're trying to kind of, you know, go opposite directions. So how we do that, it's very simple. It's, you know, they're sort of different instructions out there. The one I like is, you know, putting one of your hands on your chest and one of your hands on your belly, on your stomach, and then trying the best you can to move as much as possible your stomach hand and keep the chest hand as still as possible. You know, it's not good being perfectionist around this or anything else. So your chest hand is going to still move a little bit, but really trying to, as I sometimes say, it's almost like you're blowing a balloon, right? And you're still, you know, kind of a belly dancing, right? You're pushing that stomach. You want that hand to really go out and go in, and really go out and go in. And another helpful thing about that is, you know, focus on counting slowly. 5 seconds or three seconds in and 5 seconds out, so that your out breath, your exhale is actually a bit longer. So you go 1, 2, 3, you're breathing on, stomach is way down, and then you're breathing out 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And this exhale has been shown to actually activate this calming, soothing parasympathetic system. So it's a quite effective strategy, actually. You know, decades ago in psychology labs, they would do these experiments where they would produce sort of anxious states or almost like panic-like states with clients. You can do that in different ways, have them inhale things or, you know, give them a shot of something. And so they would create these very anxious states with students, volunteer students, and then they would practice different relaxation techniques with them. And diaphragmatic breathing is one of the relaxation techniques. And it turned out that on average, for an average person, it takes about 7 minutes of doing this to calm you from a quite anxious state. So, you know, it's not instantaneous if you're really, really anxious, but it's very potent and very, 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 very useful. You know, it's a kind of a useful a coping thing to have in your pocket. Even knowing that you have that, I think sometimes helps, right? That, you know, 7 minutes, you know, it's not that long. You can always go to the bathroom if you need, can excuse yourself and sort of just do that for 7 minutes. So you know, there are these, you know, very kind of bodily based methodologies, strategies that I think are very helpful as an antidote to the worry process that happens cognitively, that happens in our head, and that ends up producing, of course, the anxious, you know, state. So there are many of these, but, you know, those are two of my favorite ones. And I find that, you know, over more than 20 years of working as a therapist, I found that for, you know, most people, those work really well. So let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm. I have a question about, you know, this hasn't happened yet at our time of recording, but isolating and self-isolating can really lead to a lot of loneliness. And I'm curious about you know, that has an impact on people's mental health as well. And what do you think we can do, or is that another important thing to focus on, is making sure we don't feel we still are able to connect with others, even if we are physically isolated from people?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because, you know, connecting with others and having social support and belonging and connectedness is one of the primary human needs, right? We are social animals. So, and, you know, I'm going to actually connect it with the previous conversation, you know, that in a sort of bigger picture, not just thinking about what you can do in the moment, during these incredibly uncertain and naturally anxiety provoking times, you know, realizing that anxiety is going to show up. It's a natural emotion. It's going to show up. And what you, the best you can do is actually accept it as is, accept that that is going to show up because it's a natural, you know, emotional state that shows up in dangerous situations. And this is a globally a pretty dangerous situation. And focus on things in your life that bring you a sense of purpose and sense of meaning, and connecting with others is one of those things, of course. You know, it can be sense of purpose and meaning in your spiritual religious life. It can be, you know, in your creative ways. It can be, again, connecting to other people. And so that becomes tricky if we are, you know, to do social distancing. You know, of course, it's more draconian if we are in quarantine or if we are isolated. But even for most of us who are instructed, rightly so, to practice social distancing, it becomes very hard to rely on that sense of meaning and purpose, and also something that, you know, it becomes harder to have one of the main protective factors that usually protect us actually from being from getting, you know, psychologically very disturbed, and which is other people. So how do you do that? It's tricky, but it's not impossible. You know, obviously, this is the time when our much maligned technology comes to the rescue, and it's really about intentionally, deliberately using that technology. You know, it's technology can be used in so many ways, and you know, I've written about, you know, also technology and social media and psychological effects of that, and really what it comes down to is, you know, there's nothing inherently good or bad about technology. Technology just is, and there are products out there. It's how we use it, right? And so if during these anxious times we use it purely as an escape, as a numbing, emotionally numbing a strategy, or escape from our feelings of emotion. So we, you know, we binge watch Netflix, or sort of, again, go mindlessly through, you know, silly YouTube videos, or, you know, down the social media, you know, feed and so forth. We're going to do that to some extent, of course. But if we find ourselves doing that a lot and being just kind of sucked into it, that's usually not going to be the most productive way to deal with what we're facing right now, because it's going to be from, it's going to come from avoidance of anxiety, avoidance of these negative states. So I'm going there to distract myself, right? And to do something mindless so I can run away from how I'm feeling right now. If instead we approach very mindfully, very deliberately, very consciously technology and say, okay, so I'm going to schedule, you know, video, hopefully, you know, if at all possible, video chats with my friends, with especially my friends and relatives who might be even more vulnerable than me, be, you know, immunocompromised or elderly, or, you know, who suffer from more severe mental disorders, or just even any mental disorders, you know, like really up the frequency of check-ins via text or social media, but also make sure to schedule longer conversations, be it phone, be it video. I think that video, whenever possible, it's really much more useful, because you can place, you know, Skype, FaceTime, WhatsApp video you know, on the table or on the floor while you're playing with your kids, while you're having dinner. And it's really mimics real life much better. I mean, I'm an immigrant myself here, and all my family of origin is kind of scattered around the world. So I've been, you know, using these kind of means to stay in touch with my family for decades, you know, and I found that to be just amazing, you know, putting a Skype on while we're having dinner, and they might be having breakfast in Australia, and my little niece is there, you know, who's not going to sit and talk to you, of course, for a while. But, you know, she'll be running in and out, and she'll be waving to me, and sort of we almost feel, oh, we're sitting here eating together, you know. And so it's possible. I know even from my, you know, personal experience, it's definitely possible to, it's not the same as being right there, but it's possible to feel connected. It's possible to use these, you know, video technologies to be part of each other's lives, you know, absolutely. And I think that's important, as is remembering, you know, members of society and, you know, our friends and family who are particularly vulnerable, and checking in, having, you know, if you're part of a faith-based or other community group, organizing yourselves to have like a buddy system so that, you know, people are checked on a regular basis, because I am concerned about mental health effects of social distancing. Actually, I was sort of myself ruminating on it yesterday when I heard the term social distancing. It was interesting. As a psychologist, my first reaction was like, oh my God, this is going to be bad, you know. And of course, I read then a lot about it, as I do. I'm a scientist too, and I completely understand epidemiological reasons, and, you know, it flattens the curve of infections, and makes total sense to me, and I think we absolutely should be doing it. And I am extremely concerned about psychologically about the not just vulnerable population of elderly people and immunocompromised in terms of getting virus, but about vulnerable populations psychologically, which are people with pre-existing mental disorders or, you know, psychological problems, or those who are susceptible to those. So I ended up writing an op-ed. It's going to be actually published in Chicago Tribune about it. So, you know, so hopefully, you know, it's going to get there, out there, the word, you know, that we really, you know, we cannot forget that those vulnerable members of our society in this moment, because, you know, isolation is really, really detrimental to a lot of psychological disorders.
Mm. Well, this has been so great to talk to you, Dr. Kecmanovic. We really appreciate your taking the time, and I know so much of what you said is going to be so helpful to so many of our listeners. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having me, and stay healthy.
Thank you. You too.
So finally, last but most certainly not least, we spoke with Alyssa Walker. Alyssa is a writer who is the urbanism editor at curbed.com. She's also the co-host of LA Podcast, which is a really wonderful local podcast here in Los Angeles that covers local politics and civic issues. And she wrote a really incredible piece recently called Stay Home, 500,000 Homeless Americans Can't Follow Coronavirus Advice. So we spoke with her about the impact coronavirus is having on our unhoused population and vulnerable communities, and what we can do to try to help them during this time.
Thank you, Alyssa, so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So, you know, your article really highlights some issues that I think a lot of people just aren't thinking about right now.
I'm here in LA. You're in LA, where it just started raining really hard.
Yeah.
Right before we started this interview. It's supposed to rain for a week. And you just have to take the mindset of, you know, what is already a very tough day-to-day existence when you don't have a permanent address here in Los Angeles, and the choices that you have. So right now, as it starts raining and you get word of this, you know, hopefully you are aware of this virus, and that you know what the threats are to you as a person who has potentially underlying medical conditions, which is one of the at-risk groups. They tell you, if you're on the street and you need a dry place to go to one of these shelters or service centers, well, those are going to be very crowded places. You know, our mayor just got in front of everybody today and said, you know, limit small make your gatherings smaller, limit large gatherings, don't get together with a lot of people, create 6 feet between you. None of that can happen if you are going to get a meal, going to find a dry place to sleep. So we have, we already have a crisis here in the city where we don't have enough housing for people who need to find a place to live. But now we're going to have a problem where we need to keep people apart from each other in these types of living situations. And also the city needs to like work really hard just to find places to put people when they actually do get sick, if they actually do get sick.
We have had listeners reach out to us asking, like, what can I do to help? I'm here in a privileged position where I have healthcare and I can self-quarantine if need be. What can I be doing to help underserved populations? And I'm curious if there are any kind of solutions that are available now for people to help make an impact.
Well, one thing I heard that was, same thing, like I'm a privileged person. I have a house that I could be in right now. And what I didn't realize is how much that the panic buying that had occurred over the last few weeks had really affected people who, one, have, a budget where they might not have a lot of money to go stock up on essentials, but also things like hand sanitizer, water, toilet paper. These are things that people buy because they don't have access to maybe perhaps running water or soap or toilets. So you are actually probably clearing out the shelves that prevented someone else from getting just something they need for their day-to-day lives. So if you are one of the people who have some of those items stockpiled in your house, there could be a place where you could donate it to a local homeless service provider. I've seen some of the ones in LA, some of the groups that are out there doing outreach have posted exactly the items that are on those empty shelves about that they need for people. So look for places you can donate things that you might have a little too much extra of at this point.
That's a really good suggestion.
Yeah. And I know I have another friend who kind of works in this field and suggested making sure that local food banks you're donating, like as we are, you know, if you were collecting food for yourself to have at home, to also be sure to drop some off at your local food bank as well to make sure their shelves are stocked.
One thing that go ahead, Alyssa.
I was going to say that's a great suggestion. And also, you know, you can think of people that you might not even know who are food insecure. You know, they might not be, say, unhoused, or they might not be someone sleeping on the street, but you can also check with just neighbors around you to make sure that some people can't drive to the store, they can't stock up, they can only get, you know, what they can carry on their back home or in a cart. So see if you can make a trip for someone else on your block.
And then in terms of like longer term solutions, how should, again, people in privileged positions be trying to advocate for our unhoused neighbors? And what sorts of things should we be pushing government officials to do?
Right. I mean, it's just remarkable that it has taken this kind of situation for really our city leaders and state leaders and federal leaders, hopefully, to understand how close everyone is from being evicted, from being out on the streets, from, you know, being pushed into a living situation that could be at this point, a matter of life and death. We are seeing some things like emergency bills being put forth that would say stop all evictions, which I think if you can't go to your low wage job, if you're, you know, someone who just gets paid hourly, you get your shift cut, you're all of a sudden, you know, you can't make rent. We have to make sure that we could hopefully across the country come to an agreement where we're not going to be kicking people out of homes. And that would be, you know, getting more people out on the street where they're, you know, going to face this crisis. But I think one thing that I really want to hit home from one of the people I talked to, Theo Henderson, who has a really great podcast called We the Unhoused. He lives in a park in Chinatown, a neighborhood here in LA. And he was like, you know, they complain, people complain, because there's people sleeping on the street or going to the bathroom in front of their house or using, you know, the park restrooms as a place to clean up. But then those same people are out there fighting against shelters and service centers being built in their neighborhood. And this is, it makes perfect sense, you know, to someone who is from that position. But for people who are in privileged positions, who are homeowners, who are in these communities fighting these, it just, I can't understand the logic, because wouldn't you want that person to be in a safe environment where they are not going to be hurting themselves or endangering themselves or someone else? So I think, like, if we can think about it in a way that we need to all think of this problem as something that can be solved, not just for this current, not just for this current crisis that we're facing with coronavirus, but as a way to really underline the idea that everyone needs to get inside, everyone needs to find a home, and we need to make sure that we're preventing other people from being out on the streets.
Yes. Yeah. Alyssa, is there anything else that you think our listeners should know about the unhoused population and coronavirus?
I think one thing that I've seen in a lot of other stories, and hopefully I did not convey that through mine, is this idea that homeless population poses some kind of risk to Americans right now who are worried about getting this virus, being infected by this virus. There are not cases that I know of in the city of LA where someone who is in this community has this virus. The people that we know that are getting sick and that are infecting other people are largely wealthy Americans who have traveled to other places and have brought it back here. So, and yes, there will be community spread. We know there are some cases now where people are getting it who don't have direct contact with other people. But if you look at something like, you know, who should we be unfairly stigmatizing, or perhaps, you know, saying that you should stay away from them or they are dangerous for our society, it's definitely not the homeless community. It's like people who went on cruise ships. Mm-hmm. So if you want to talk about what the actual risk is to you, maybe focus on, you know, it's the social distancing thing is the great solution here, where we need to be thinking about how we're keeping ourselves safe, but also not unfairly blaming other groups that really have nothing to do with this.
That is such a good point.
Yeah.
And such a good reminder.
Yes.
Thank you. Well, thanks, Alyssa.
I'm so happy to be on. Yeah. Thank you for bringing up these important issues.
Thank you. We really appreciate it. Well, this is the end of our first ever coronavirus episode.
Yeah. And we just want to encourage you all to reach out to us, reach out to your friends, reach out to your family, stay connected. And we're looking forward to hearing what you think of this episode too.
Yeah. And we really, really appreciate so many of you who wrote in asking us to talk about all different aspects of what is going on right now with coronavirus. And we are here to hear more thoughts on the gram. You know what we say, hit us up on the jeems.
Yep.
Hit us up on the gram.
Yep. You know where to find us.
And call our voicemail number, 781-591-0390.
Yeah.
I haven't memorized two and a half years. So we're wishing everyone listening and not listening health and safety. And we're thinking of you.
Bye.
Bye.